together with us today as well. We're going to finish up some thoughts we began a few weeks ago, and I certainly appreciate you bearing with me as we've considered this matter. We began a few weeks ago by posing the question, if we were to put a sign in front of the church building stating that love happens here, what would be the response to that? And certainly within our world, there would be those who say, no, you're much too narrow-minded, you're much too judgmental for you to be able to say that love happens here. But in reality, love does happen here, for we have based this little series of lessons off of Ephesians 3, 18 and 19. We're speaking to God's people, and Paul prays that they would come to understand the breadth, the length, the height, and the depth of the love of God, the love of Christ which surpasses knowledge. That is among us that we see the love of God. And in particular, when we consider that we are so unalike in so many ways. Whether it be the temptations that we face, whether it be our background, whatever it may be, and yet we see in the church that God's love is available for all of us. And then we turned the lens on ourselves. If it's among God's people that we see fully the love of God, then shouldn't this also be where our love happens? And last Sunday we looked at the notion of how broad our love should be. That just as God's love was broad enough to bring us to Him regardless of what our sinful background was, so our love should be broad enough that it would be willing to reach out to any and to all. Understanding, as Paul speaks about in 1 Corinthians 6, verses 9 through 11, that regardless of their background, God could wash, God could sanctify, and God could justify. That's how broad our love should be. Today, we're going to consider these last three aspects of love. And we'll begin with how long should our love be? Again, looking at the Ephesian letter, just give us a little context of at least the way that I've approached this text. And speaking of God's love and the length of God's love, there seems to be in the letter to the Ephesians a little indication of what is being regarded here. Back in the second chapter, and speaking of this division that had existed between Jew and Gentile, and yet Christ came for both. And even though the Jews were thought to be near to God, they still were not what God desired of them to be. And so he says of Christ in verses 17 and 18 of the second chapter of Ephesians, that he came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. For through him we both have our access in one spirit to the Father. Who did Christ come for? Not just one kind of people. Not just one group of people. He came to bring those who were thought to be near to God, close to God. He came to bring those who were far away from God, close to God, to God Himself. Well, this is certainly something we have to look at as well. This is a concept we've returned to numerous times over the last several years. The fact is that if I'm to love like God, then my love has to be long enough to reach everyone around me. It means I must reach brethren who are like me, and I must also reach brethren who are not like me. I have James chapter 2 on the screen as a passage to consider, and I'd invite you to read James 2 verses 1 through 7 with me this morning. This looks at one area that may differentiate us, but it's certainly not the only area that could possibly differentiate God's people from each other. So in James chapter 2, beginning in verse 1, James gives this admonition to the people he's writing to. My brethren, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. For if a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, and there also comes in a poor man in dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one who is wearing the fine clothes and say, "You sit here in a good place." And you say to the poor man, "You stand over there or sit down by my footstool." Have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil motives? Listen, my beloved brethren. Did not God choose the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor man. Is it not the rich who oppress you and personally drag you into court? Do they not blaspheme the fair name by which you have been called? Certainly that is an area that God's people throughout time had to be cognizant of. That throughout time there have been differences in the socioeconomic status of God's people, and James is addressing that. Are you going to show personal favoritism toward those who have achieved great things in this world, who have accumulated great wealth, and ignore those who are poor among you? What a shame that would be. We partook of the Lord's Supper this morning. And as you read 1 Corinthians chapter 11, it was seen that there's that same kind of attitude there. Of those who are without and those who had, and the idea that they must wait on each other. Well, again, economic status is only one area that may differentiate us. We may be predisposed to associate with those who are of the same age as us. And certainly there's nothing wrong with that. All of us are at a particular point in life. We see others who are in the same point of life. Maybe they're going through some of the same struggles or are facing the same challenges that we're facing. And so we bond together and we lean on each other. But we also see there's a danger there. How much wisdom am I ignoring if I never show any regard toward those who are older than me? How much wisdom, if I have any, am I failing to dispense if I never associate with those who are younger than me? How much aid could I be to them, and yet I've not shown them the preference that I should? Again, that's only one area. What about established versus new? Within this church, there are members here who have been here for years and years. And as you get used to people, you, of course, spend time with them. You find them to be encouraging. They do so much for you. But then what of those who are new to our number? Those who are still somewhat on the periphery? Those who I've not had the opportunity to associate with? I must not limit who I'm going to shed my love on, to whom I'm going to encourage. Or what about those who have spent time encouraging me versus those who have not? There's all kinds of different areas that we can look at, and yet my love needs to be long enough to reach all of them. I need not show personal favoritism toward anyone, whether it be based on their economic status, their age, or even what they've done for me in the past. Romans 14 is also a passage that we spend considerable time in, and I'm not going to go through it at length this morning. But certainly the application here in regards to personal convictions. My love must not be only long enough to reach those who have reached the same conclusions on matters that I've reached. Now, in the context of Romans 14, he's talking about matters of religious observance. That there were those among them who could not eat certain foods or would not refrain from thinking of particular days as important. And so the words of the apostle are, don't judge them, don't stand in judgment on them. And yet we find ourselves needing to make the same application about various things in our lives, whether it be societal issues, political matters. Our love must not be long enough only to encompass those who see the world and have formed convictions in the same way that I have. Just looking at a couple of verses from this chapter, we see the emphasis of why. First off, verse 4, who are you to judge the servant of another? To his own master he stands or falls, and he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. Fact is, it's not my opinion that matters. It is the opinion of God. And if I am forming my convictions based on His Word, then I need to encourage others to do the same. They will stand or fall before God Himself. Then verse 15. If because of food your brother is hurt, you are no longer walking according to love. Do not destroy with your food him for whom Christ died. Why must I not only extend my love to those who view the world in the same way as I? What hurt am I causing my brother? What hurt am I causing my sister who needs my love, who needs my encouragement, when I do not extend it to them? But what about those around us? This has been an emphasis of ours. And again, we are very excited that JP is coming, and he and Chelsea to come and to work with us and to help us in our evangelism efforts. The fact is that if we're going to be successful evangelistically, then our love has to be long enough to reach those who are just right around the corner, those who are all around us. I know I've got some visitors here, and so you may not be familiar with Brother Steve Patton. Steve has worked with this congregation 25, 30 years. What's the number now, Steve? In that time frame. Okay. Those of you who know Steve, you know that he is a great example of someone who is concerned and cares about the souls of others. Now, you could go to Steve today and say, Steve, if you wanted to preach one sermon, what would you preach from? He'd probably tell you a joke. Well, I've got this 20-part series on Acts 2:38 that I'd really like to go through. Is it 30-part or 20-part? It's somewhere in that vicinity. But if you've been around Steve at all, you know that's not true. You know that if Steve were to get up here today and preach, and there's going to be one lesson, you know what text he'd be using? John chapter 4. Because I know I've heard Steve preach from John chapter 4. And why? Think about what you read about Jesus in that chapter. Here is Jesus confronted with a woman who is so unlike Him. She's of a different nationality. She's a Samaritan. He's a Jew. She, of course, is of a different gender. She's a woman. He's a man. And you go throughout the rest of that conversation in John chapter 4, and you see that there's a different moral standing. Here is Jesus, the Son of God, Holy of Holies. And here is a woman who's had numerous husbands and now is one who is with one who's not even her husband. And then you go through the different religious viewpoints. And she has asked Jesus, you know, where's the right place to worship? You say that it's in Jerusalem. We say that it's on this mountain. And Jesus even informs her. Salvation comes from the Jews. They are the ones who receive the Word of God. And of course, he points to the future where those who worship God will worship Him in spirit and in truth, no longer being confined to whether it be Jerusalem or that mountain. But our point just being, here is Jesus, the very Son of God, and what is He doing in this chapter? He is connecting with someone who is so very different from Him. For what purpose? You go forward in that chapter and the disciples return in verse 27. And what do you read about the disciples in verse 27? It says they were amazed that He had been speaking with a woman. And yet no one said, what do you seek? Or why do you speak with her? How long was their love compared to Jesus's? Not nearly as long at this point. They are amazed. Jesus is speaking with this woman. They wouldn't have spoken with her. But then notice what Jesus does. You read just a couple of verses later, in verse 30, this woman has returned to her village, and now the village is coming out to see Jesus. And it's as they're coming out that Jesus says to His own disciples, that they question Him about food, and He says, I have food to eat already. And He says in verse 34, my food is to do the will of Him who sent me and to accomplish His work. Do you not say there are yet 4 months, and then comes the harvest? Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white for harvest. And of course, what would those disciples have seen if they had lifted up their eyes in that moment? They'd have seen the Samaritans coming out to them. People who were very different from the disciples. They're coming to Jesus. And Jesus says, the field is white for harvest. We believe that the fields right here are white for harvest. And guess what? Some of that harvest is going to be very different from me, and it's going to be very different from you. They may even speak a different language than I speak or you speak. They're certainly going to have different life experiences than I've had. And they may have views of the world that I'm unfamiliar with. How long is my love? Is my love long enough to reach those right here in our community who could come and know God? Love should happen here. Our love should also have the height that God's has. When we talked about this, we were speaking of the fact that God's love has a purpose. It's to bring us to Him. His love spans the height between earth and heaven. A few Wednesday nights ago, Brother Dylan Adams presented a fantastic lesson for us. And the point of that lesson was there's a difference between being nice and being kind. You may remember that. If I'm trying only to be nice, then I'm just acting in a non-offensive way. I'm being pleasant, but I don't want to offend anybody, and I don't want to get anybody upset with me, so I'm just going to be pleasant, and we're going to maintain a friendly relationship here. Kind is different. Well, love is different, too. Being kind to someone may, in fact, mean that they do get upset with you if you've had to point out something that's wrong. If you've had to help them see error, well, love is the same way. Chances are, almost all of us have been caught by a parent or an authority figure in the act of doing something that's wrong. You remember what that was like? And it may have had any number of ways in which it was manifest. You're there, you're doing something, you think you're in secret, and along comes mom or dad, and there goes the ear. Or the swat to the behind. Or the scolding, whatever it is. Why does that happen? Because love can be fierce. Think of the Laodiceans that you read about in Revelation chapter 3. They're just going all about their business and thinking they're fine, and then they get this letter, these words from Jesus Himself. And Jesus says, you're not hot, you're not cold, you're lukewarm, I'd spew you out of my mouth. Can you imagine the wake-up call that'd be for this group of professed Christians? And they hear from their master, and he says, I got no use for you. And what does he say to this to them? Revelation 3 and verse 19, those whom I love, I reprove and discipline. God's love for us is fierce. That everything He does, the encouragement that He gives, yes, but also the rebuke that He gives, has one intention: to help us reach heaven. Love is fierce. If my love is going to be the same kind of love that God has, it has to be fierce as well. It's going to have to do some of the very same things that God's love does for us. I'm mindful of what Paul said to the Thessalonians. In this wonderful passage which encapsulates different things that love may have to do. And he says to them, we urge you, brethren, Admonish the unruly. Love does that. Love looks at one who's going away from God and says, this is wrong. And it's not wrong because I say it, and I'm not saying this simply so I can say that you're wrong and I'm right. No, this is wrong. This is not what God desires for you. Come back. There is a path that God wants you on. It leads to Him. Love does that. Admonish the unruly. Encourage the faint-hearted. Because none of us are strong all the time. You read the history of Paul that's found in the book of Acts, and you see that there are numerous occasions where Paul is downcast. And either the Lord Himself encourages Paul or brethren encourage Paul in a variety of ways, because even the strongest of us become faint-hearted. And so love does that. Love looks out for those who are struggling and seeks to encourage them. Help the weak, because the weak have real burdens. And so love is going to do that. Love is going to fulfill exactly what Paul talks about in Galatians chapter 6, that when even if a brother is caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so you will not too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. And love is patient with all, because that's what love is. That wonderful definition of love that Paul gives in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, he starts off by saying, love is patient. And when you go to the last part of that definition of love in verse 7, I think you can see that as all an aspect of love being patient. So when he says that love bears all things, and love believes all things, and love hopes all things, and love endures all things, it's because that what is love is patient first and foremost. God's love for us is fierce. And it's fierce because it has an aim. That He doesn't want us to just feel good about ourselves. He wants us to be like Him and to be with Him. Our love has to have the same component of height to it, to help bridge the span between here on earth and heaven above, to help each one of us reach it. And finally, when we were talking about God's love, we said that God's love is so deep that even as the next verse says in verse 19, to know the love of Christ which surpasses knowledge is so deep we're not going to fully comprehend it. In fact, do you remember what Paul says in chapter 2 of Ephesians in verse 4? And speaking of what God did for us, all of us who were lost, all of us who were dead in sin. And then in chapter 2 and in verse 4, he talks about God and His great love with which He loved us. Again, in my mind, it's as if Paul is struggling to comprehend, okay, how do I talk about God and His love? And what he ends up with is, it's a great love with which He loved us. That's how wonderful, that's how deep it is. I'm just going to have to say it's great. Why is God's love for us so deep that we cannot comprehend it? Well, for all kinds of reasons. But even considering what we've already discussed, His love didn't define me by what I used to be. Now, it certainly knew what I used to be, and it did not approve of what I used to be. But His love did not define me by that. It did not say, this is what you are and this is what you always will be. No, His love saw a real possibility for each and every one of us. And no matter what sin we had been engaged in, no matter what temptations we had succumbed to, He knew we could be like Him. And He provided the means for it. His love didn't give up on me. If ever there's been a patient love, it has been the patient love of our Father. And His love invested in me. And no greater investment could be made than the giving of His own Son. What if others, when they spoke about whether the University Church of Christ as a collective group, or they spoke just about the members in general, or a specific member, maybe they were speaking of you, and they were to say, "He loves me, she loves me, and they love me in such a way that I can't even fully comprehend it. That our love doesn't just define people by what they are now," and again, just like God's love, it doesn't mean we approve of what people may be right now, but it sees, again, God can wash, God can sanctify, God can justify anyone and everyone that will come to Him. What if they were to say of our love that our love doesn't give up on them at the first sign of struggle, but rather we exhibit patience and we work with them as they strive to please the Lord? And what if they were to say about our love that our love invests in them? The most precious commodity that we have, we give our time, we give our prayers, we open our hearts and our homes for them. If they were to say that about our love, then maybe they would also begin to say, just like Paul says of God, that love they showed me, that was a great love with which they loved me. And how fitting that would be, considering we're supposed to be like Him. We're not going to put a new sign out in front of the building. Again, sadly, in our culture, that phrase would be completely misunderstood. The intent would be completely misunderstood. That does not change the fact that God's love happens here. God's love is seen in what we are. It certainly must not change our aim as a church. That our aim as a church is to make sure love happens here. That just as God's love is broad enough, long enough, high enough, and deep enough for all of us, so our love for each other must be as well. We invite you this morning to experience the love of God. That love is broad enough for you. His love, because it is that fierce love that wants you to be in heaven with Him, that love points out what's wrong in your life. It shows where your character falls short of His. And guess what? All of us have had to go through that painful process of seeing what I thought was fine in my life is not fine according to God. But that love is also broad enough to take us to Him because of what He's done for us in His Son. So no matter what your struggle is, no matter how it is that you've departed from the ways of God, His love is there for you. And we as His people want to extend that love to you as well. If we can aid you this morning, if we can help you to understand more of who Jesus is and what He's done for you so that you can come to a point of faith in Him, and to show you what repentance is all about, how all of us need to change our ways in accordance with what God shows, and to even help you to be baptized into Christ, we invite you to come this morning as we stand and as we sing.